Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Oh, it's just me.
It's the Groove House Show. There's no Flicted. He's running late. Barrett's got to work. Pete's in San Antonio. And we got Lee in Chicago. Dwight is not here. It's just me. I think I'll play a song or something. I don't know.
And Jay is in New Zealand, freaking out. All right.
That's a gotcha.
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And I'm Groovehouse.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo. Wow.
Is that not a fast intro? You know, we're like down a couple of people.
We're down.
We're Lee free.
And maybe even, was Dwight going to show up, or is that?
No. He had a project.
Okay. Yeah.
I believe cats. We may have him next week.
They're undocumented cats somewhere in the world.
Well, yeah, I think he's... Probably part house. Of it is I think he's getting ready to move out of downtown Houston.
Oh.
Because I think that the Houston Chronicle building, that they're bailing on it. And
they're leaving... Oh, no.
And going out to the, like, that Houston Post kind of...
The old Post.
Oh, that's kind of a...
Building.
Yeah.
The brutalist...
That's the, like... postmodern castle with the turrets.
Yeah, it's just hard to get to because it sits in between all the little 610 loopy service roads.
It's easy to get to. Take West Park.
Yeah, West Park and I aren't friends. It deceives me.
So let's see, the basic show information. Let's see, geekradio.com for the website, and that's got links to, or at least once I get my internet connection up and working again, here in studio, I'll post the links for tonight's discussion stuff. You can also, from geekradio.com, you can use a link to get to the IRC, the show within a show. We're at channel pound tech bytes on irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
All right, we're getting our game back slowly. It. Yeah.
And let's see. So is there anything else? We do have a geek gathering coming this Friday.
Yeah, Cones. So it seems a little bit early. That's because we had, you know, the 20th anniversary party just 2 weeks ago. But it's time to come out again.
It seems like
I think it was two. Maybe it was 3 weeks, but I believe it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's still not that. It seems farther in the distance in the past than perceptually than.
So while it may not be, you know, of the same caliber of celebration, it's still going to be a really fun time, and we'll be downstairs again probably.
Yeah. I think we'll have few enough people, and plus, given the lack of lighting upstairs, if you don't bring any.
Now, if you want to go wander around the top of the parking garage in the dark by yourself, that's, you know, if something happens to you, it's not Technology Bites' responsibility.
Just
be careful.
Bring a flashlight.
Bring LEDs.
There you go.
Yeah, I also am not on the web or on the internet.
Now, what's weird though is out in the lobby, it was working on this connection and it shows me it's connected.
Was Flicted here yet? He absorbs Wi-Fi.
I think I broke it.
I was joking, but
I bent my Wi-Fi.
You got your Bluetooth in my Wi-Fi. Yeah. So far, no good. Which
are there numbers in the password? Can you even tell me if they're actual physical numbers? There aren't, right?
No,
it's just that
no.
thing right there with the capital, that thing right there. That's actually the password. If people drive by and type in that thing right there with that thing right there, that's yeah. the station's using.
Well,
no, I can't get on.
Yeah, I'm getting an IP from, from DHCP,
but I'm not
getting any internet connectivity.
Connectivity?
I'm not getting connectivity or connectivity or any. I'm getting nothing.
Maybe we'll have to go to Cones.
Connectivity.
Connectivity. Let's see here. So advanced.
Jay, this is not a drill.
we're actually having
connectivity issues.
I'll renew my DHCP lease.
It just worked for me.
Okay, maybe someone was rebooting something.
Yeah, funny. The coincidence is when I hit the renewed my DHCP, then suddenly like all the links came up and stuff popped up and
Ta-da.
Started working. So I don't think it had. I think it was coincidence, but. So yeah, we've got the different lineup tonight, which that's cool, and
it's a parallel universe Tech Bytes.
So yeah, show up at the Geek Gathering. We do have some shirts left. There are some. I need. To, I've
what
got,
sizes? I know I bought 10, but I might need to buy some more.
We have a variety of the sizes, especially in
black.
I can't
wear those.
And then we had some
I can't
of
wear
the,
variety.
Like double XL. I mean, we have everything from small to double XL, I believe.
Okay.
I think what we have left is the double XLs in like red and blue, and then in black we have an assortment.
Will you toss them in the trunk and bring them to the Geek Gathering?
Yeah, I can
possibly
do that.
If people still want.
Yeah,
you know,
I'll post. I'm
going
to
post
are you,
online.
Are you coming
if
down
you
to
feel
the
like
Geek
driving
Gathering?
Back
yeah,
to
I'll
Houston.
Come. I'll come in for the
really?
Geek Gathering. Yeah,
it's just running laps right
it's
now.
It's like in 2 days.
Yeah, I know.
you just stay here.
Then, yeah, that could work too.
I think Bear's got a spare room.
Yeah, if you can climb all over all the dead computers.
Yeah, I have obligations. I have client stuff tomorrow that I have to go and be at. So I go
You
back.
Can't do that stuff remotely anymore?
No, this is the like physically the backups where I physically take the backups off site, so I have to go there. You can't. I have not yet been able to figure out a way to
you don't have
take
like
that
a,
off-site without...
You don't have like a sysadmin help desk guy for that?
No, it's a briefcase full of magnetic tape.
Help desk guy.
Handcuffed to his wrist.
So, So I'm here for this. I'll come in for the Geek Gathering. Sunday, I'm going to Brenham for
Bluebell.
Yeah.
Tech show.
I am puzzled by the, like, craziness of people who... are just going nuts because Bluebell's coming back.
Oh, I thought it was already back. Is it not back?
It's back.
They're phasing
back.
In Houston, in HEBs for a few weeks, but only four flavors. And they kind of cheated because one of the flavors
Is Listeria?
Is two of the other flavors. No, so they came out with, like, homemade vanilla, homemade and then, Listeria. Like, Dutch chocolate, and then buttered pecan. I don't know why they came at that one, but...
That's a popular one.
But then the fourth one is the Great Divide, which is homemade vanilla and Dutch chocolate and half.
That sounds like a cheaty... That's not a real flavor.
Right. No, that's cheating. That's creative packaging. It's three flavors, four buckets of ice cream.
It's less machines they have to run, less machines they have to worry about keeping clean. You know, they're trying not to kill you again.
What about cookies and cream, right? Shouldn't that be up there some pretty high?
I'm sure they'll take your complaint.
It's just multiple versions of vanilla. You know, homemade vanilla, vanilla bean.
Well, the vanilla bean one, I think, is better than the homemade vanilla.
Oh, yeah. Vanilla bean is the best.
I was driving through Houston. I came across this show on radio about ice cream.
The Blue Bell show. Blue Bell's mediocre show. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud on the
air? Houston does have. There has been.
It's decent.
I like Blue Bell okay.
It's just not that.
It's better than Blue Bunny.
Yeah, there's a reason.
I don't think Blue Bunny's
like
killed anyone yet.
For a half gallon, because
it's half water.
They haven't killed anyone yet either.
But I like Ben and Jerry's better.
Houston has local stuff now too. We've got like three or four ice cream parlors that have popped up.
Like
Fat Cats, Fat Cat Creamery.
Haven't been there.
It's pretty good. They actually have a storefront now, somewhere in the Heights.
I've been to Amy's, which is originally from Austin.
Yeah, they're from Austin,
chain.
But they're kind of a Texas staple.
They're pretty good.
Anybody that puts alcohol in ice cream is it's fine.
Oh yeah, I've been to in Austin. There's one called Lick, which does like really like wild flavors and fancy different flavors.
Do they make a salt flavored? Because it'd be Salt Lick.
Ba-dum-bum. Sued.
Barbecue flavored.
Are they the voodoo donuts of ice cream?
Somebody needs to geek it up and do like the 1 minute liquid nitrogen ice cream. That would be pretty cool. They did that at Linicon a while ago, but you could probably lose a hand, or a foot, depending on, how careful you are with, sub-zero frozen liquids.
Would you lose it in the ice cream?
Ooh, that could be a new flavor. Chunky Monkey contains actual
frozen flesh.
No. Okay, maybe not. However, if any of our listeners have liquid nitrogen, please bring it to the Geek Gathering.
Ice cream is
careful
people.
What you wish for.
I know. That would
make,
be awesome. For anything, really.
It'd be like the
Dippin' Dots out of it. Isn't that supposed to be the new futuristic?
I think they went bankrupt.
Yeah, that was the future of ice cream in like 1991.
Although they're in like, if you go in the grocery store, somebody is doing it.
Well, no, I think they went bankrupt within the last year or two, but I guess they're reorging, and while they're bankrupt, they're still continuing to run the stores or something.
No one told the frontline stores.
Either that
they're still
or they were so
the war.
Futuristic that the stock is still available for them to distribute.
They made so much of it that the warehouses are still full.
I thought the network had come back, and I'm not seeing it.
It's up and down.
It'll give me a DHCP lease.
It's like a cheap network.
I think we might be time to go to the, I guess I need to go to Plan iPad Mini LTE.
Packet over carrier pigeon.
Go to Plan LTE.
Release the pigeons.
I bet Jay's doing this remotely to us.
Yeah. Did he even go to New Zealand? Is he just hiding out? Is he photoshopping Hobbit photos?
He and Lee are sitting somewhere having, they're probably at Krispy Kreme. Let's talk about overhyped things in
that,
Houston.
I don't understand that. Because, okay, I understand, a guy bought the franchise.
Hey, you're the guy that
he
likes Blue Bell ice cream, so.
I do like Blue Bell ice cream. But Blue Bell's from Texas. Krispy Kreme's from, I don't know, the Midwest somewhere. And people acted like
Carolinas.
It was crack
like
when they
South
showed
Carolina
up.
Or something.
Actually, when I was in Raleigh.
We don't have good donuts here already.
When I was in Raleigh, I went to a Krispy Kreme there, and it was really old. Like, the sign was old neon sign. But, no, when they first showed up, like, people from the Midwest, it was like crack. Like, people were lined up for, like, miles.
Those are the same people that like Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, Dunkin' Donuts is okay. But I didn't think Krispy Kreme's that awesome. Like, if you get them, like, right off the line, they're kind of good because they're still hot.
Any donut right off the line is hot is good.
Yeah,
period.
But it's hard to kind of find that usually. Like, Krispy Kreme's kind of always making them, and they're right off the line.
Well, they do the sign. They used to do the sign. And I saw, almost a couple of near accidents by people. Like, sign goes on, three lanes to the right. It's like, all right, gentlemen.
That's how Flickit had his first motorcycle accident.
Make the block. Come back around.
But the thing that's weird to me is that, that guy got mad because I think what I heard was they wanted him to upgrade the equipment. And he was like, I've only opened these restaurants for, like, a year and a half or something. Like, I'm not going to replace all the equipment. It's too expensive. And the franchise said, no, you have to replace all the equipment. And he's like, okay, fine. I'm just going to shut them all down and keep the license, and y'all can just not have anything in Houston. So I'm guessing his license expired and that somebody else is doing it now. But the thing is, they're not really gone, because you can find Krispy Kreme donuts all over the freaking place in, like, every convenience store.
Gas stations and convenience stores. Hmm. Now, my Krispy Kreme story is that...
did they let you dip your hand in the vat?
They didn't let him.
It wasn't his hand.
In the late 90s and early 2000s, that was when I was at Chase, and I was traveling to New York frequently. And so the place where I would go and buy donuts and then get on the plane and fly home and have – because they were still fresh. I mean, you know, 3 hours later, they – you know. And but the place where I got my Krispy Kreme donuts was in World Trade Center 7. The World Trade Center Building 7 was where they had one. And New York had gone nuts for Krispy Kreme then. And it just – I got them because it's like people were crazy about
novelty.
It. So it's like, I'm going to try it. It was a novelty. And also it was like across the street from my hotel. So it was like no effort to walk over there when the, you know, you could see if there was a line before you left your room and then go over and get some and come back. And then, you know, I stopped though, because finally one of the times I'm getting back and as I'm walking through the airport concourse, there's Krispy Kreme selling donuts right in the terminal, so it's like, okay, I'm thinking I'm not gonna bust my hump to haul back to try and keep intact a flat of donuts all the way from LaGuardia to here, if that's the way that this works. So, but yeah, that built, so that particular Krispy Kreme was destroyed in September 11th. So, so you can't get them where I got Krispy Kreme from, but I don't know.
Tie it all back into technology.
I think the Krispy
Kreme, you know,
like? On Westheimer turned into a
a hot router,
Whataburger or something.
You know, I like more than sprinkles on donuts. The fact that Pete's sprinkling down Wi-Fi on us right now. I got internet.
Yay!
Code the LTE plan.
Yes. Now let me update my OS and download all the torrents.
We'll see if enough. We'll see by the end of the third week if the Wi-Fi is
all my completely legitimate open source project torrents.
Yeah, these look completely legit.
Every version of every Ubuntu spin that exists.
Okay, now actually you at home can be ahead of us, because you can now go to geekradio.com and see all the links to stories and stuff. And then I don't know, read the news out. No, now I can open the stuff. That's because that's the killer. You know, the show kind of works.
Well, you have to enter yourself.
Your pages, yeah.
The show kind of works by internet access.
Now you have to enter yourself now. You have to say, now let's go out to here and
let's go out to San Antonio.
Go out to me.
And come all the way back. I still like the intro. Can we still do the intro?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to push the button. And stuff. Yeah, I guess so it's time to I'm an angry Jay Lee. I love that. He loves that.
I feel like you're making fun of me.
Time for the news. Push the button.
Hang it away, Pete.
Push the damn button.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, we'll start with the biggest sort of geek news of the week, at least that I saw, which is that CBS has announced that they are going to have a new Star Trek series just in time for Star Trek's 50th anniversary. You know, that's 2016, and that would be 50 years since Gene Roddenberry debuted Star Trek on CBS, nicknamed his, quote, wagon train to the stars, in the hopes of attracting audiences that were overwhelmingly dedicated to the American Western. There will be much...
And
no doubt,
overweight.
There will be a much fanfare to celebrate the occasion from both fans and from Hollywood in the hopes of cashing in on the Star Trek anniversary. But, you know, CBS may trump it all with their news that they will be premiering a new Star Trek series.
That was kind of a out of left field announcement, wasn't it?
Yeah, I hadn't heard anything about it until I saw it a couple days ago.
I'm not a big fan of that whole thing, but But I have friends who are really like have like uniforms from like full on uniforms, and I saw them post on Facebook, and they were just like, "What?" Like they had no clue this was.
Well, the thing about it is, all we have is there's going to be a show called Star Trek.
Ooh, you think CBS has gotten into trolling?
The producer is from the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. What's his name? Alex Kurtzman, who served as co-writer and producer of both Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness, is going to be the executive producer.
So you think it's going to have that same kind of flashy feel? Lens flare? That was unrehearsed.
Yeah, well, J.J. Abrams and lens flare and Star Trek, I mean, he was just... That first one, he went insane.
Every possible shot, yeah.
Flare, but, you know, you've got to wonder, when will they set it in? I mean, is it going to be, maybe.
It's a reboot.
Maybe they're going to reboot Enterprise, the one that most recently
ended. Oh, please,
no.
Bacula?
So there'll be somebody goes back in time and kills Scott Bacula.
Oh, I would watch that.
A new show that starts at the beginning. No, I'm kidding.
That was just such a failed series, and I wanted it to be good, and I didn't. I haven't seen all the episodes. Like, I just stopped watching.
I never watched a single episode.
I think I made it through about three, and it was like forced reading. Like, you know, when you were like assigned something in college, and you just didn't want to read it, and you had to. But no one was making me watch it, so I just stopped.
I watched a number of them, you know, when they started with Enterprise, I didn't even. I caught episodes here and there. I didn't even try.
I went back and watched most of Enterprise, and then I went back and watched most of DS9 via the wonder of Netflix back in the early days. That was the way to do it, yeah.
What was Scott Bakula in, like with a time machine or something?
Quantum Leap.
Quantum Leap, yeah.
Yes.
Was it kind of like that?
Yeah, but with Star Trek uniforms and a odd Vulcan that could be arguably one way or the other. It was just early space travel. Man hadn't quite gotten it down right. Like, man hadn't quite gotten down how to direct Star Trek
Quantum
right.
Quantum Leap?
No. I'm jumping back to Enterprise with Bacula.
So this is supposed to be before the original Star
this
Trek?
Was basically, it was the original Starship Enterprise,
yeah.
Which was just for exploration. And
So in the original, that was D? Is that right?
NCC 1701D. They keep blowing stuff up, yeah.
So this is supposed to be A or B?
Yeah.
A? Okay. So.
No, A was the Canadian one. This is just 1701, I think.
But they, you know, the thing was, that was potentially interesting is, you know, they didn't have all the firepower and stuff didn't necessarily work all the time. You know, it was all.
Kirk just had a seductive smile. That's all he had, you know.
And
like, hey,
kind of stuff. And, well, though, I mean,
let's
they,
work this out.
The, you know, when they came up against the Klingons and the other stuff in the
what did the Klingons
the
look like?
Series.
Because you know, in the first series,
kind of Asian.
They looked like. Attila the Hun or something sort of.
Yeah, actually, I think it was Deep Space Nine. They had an episode where they explained it because they had, like, you know, they went back. They had the original ones that looked like in the original 1960s, you know, the very first Star Trek.
Worf, right? Worf went back.
And they didn't really explain. He's just like, my people don't like to talk about that.
People kind of looked at him. He's like, yeah, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that. It's like, okay.
Wow.
Because, yeah, the original, the first, I don't want to call it the first generation. What do they call it? The TOS, the original series.
Yeah.
Klingons were radically different. They kind of, I pick up on that. They kind of had wispy mustaches. They had a very warlike attitude. They didn't have horses, but, well, birds of prey. You know, they kind of stampede in, nomadic. Yeah, I see that.
But, yeah, you know.
Not quite as racist
Voyager
as the treatment from Star Wars, though.
Quickly, I think within a season. Deep Space Nine, I watched sporadically for a couple seasons. But
Voyager was a soap opera. That's the only soap opera
I've ever
watched in my life.
A single episode of Voyager either.
I watched the first one and a few, and a few others, but it lost me.
I like the Doc. It's kind of like General Hospital in space, more or less.
I've never watched General
Medical Hologram. Neither have I.
Let me turn this around to something that I have watched. So, have y'all seen the Reddit about the theory that Jar Jar Binks actually was like Sith, and
oh, that's not a theory. That's going to happen in the movies,
and actually like was supposed to turn out to be kind of like, so this guy did all like wrote this huge long article with all these like facts. It's all super conspiracy theory, right? Like all the JFK stuff, but it's really well done. And so it turns Jar Jar Binks from this like bumbling idiot that is so stupid that he annoys you to, it's like the Chinese martial arts, like drunken fighting, like drunken master kind of thing, where he looks like he's bumbling, but things really work because he's actually really good. And he did all this stuff in order to get Palpatine in control, like to get rid of the Senate, all this stuff. And it actually reads really well.
And his theory is that the first shot in the next Star Wars movie is going to be a caped figure that's the new Emperor.
It's Jar Jar.
Who's going to turn on Misa the Emperor now.
Emperor Jar Jar Teen.
So if you go read it, actually a really good read.
Followed shortly by the in-theater suicide of every open carry individual who went to the movie.
And now, speaking of, there are some spoilers out there. Like J.J. Abrams and crew, they've been very good about making sure that plot, like things that weren't too forward advanced in the plot, make it into any of the trailers. But someone messed up and did a track listing of the soundtrack and a lot of the movements, because it's kind of orchestral in nature. A lot of the movements are titled after what could
something
be plot points in the movie. So if you don't want to go in and want to be completely surprised, don't go look at, you know, the score for the movie. I've been told. I've been trying to like avoid everything. So we're within about a month now.
Yeah, although
6 weeks.
I'm wondering this, like the hidden track is Return of Slave Girl Leia, which since she's like 60, I don't know if that's a great idea.
No, she turned down her appearing role, right? Will she be in the movie? I know
she's
Mark Hamill is. Okay, they are. They're all in the movie. Oh, that's
she's
cool.
She's in the trailer.
I'm trying not to see the trailers either.
Oh,
I'm completely pristine on this.
You see her and Han in the trailer.
Okay.
I mean,
but not together.
That doesn't spoil anything.
No, they are together at one point.
She's
like
crying or something.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
One of those
so Han's
got to
be
like,
there, yeah.
Yeah,
about?
Han's definitely there.
Because Han's in there.
What's
Han's
she crying? You need a reason to cry. I'll give you a reason. So, I'm with you. When I see stuff that could be spoilery.
Just because.
She's crying because Han said something was really mean to her, and she
no
said,
way. That's
and
completely
she said,
out of
she
character,
said, that's
man.
That's really mean. That really hurt me. And he
I
said,
know.
I know.
She actually said that the last Ewok was dead, and she was crying, but not because she was sad for the Ewoks, because it took that long for the Empire, the combined might of the Empire and the Rebels, to get rid of all the Ewoks.
I will say that the marketing effort is like on par with what it was in the 70s, I remember. So maybe I just wasn't paying attention, because I was in college and we were doing, you know, other stuff when the second, you know, set of few movies came out. But there wasn't this much marketing and hype and just everywhere you look, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Was it? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although this one, you've got the Disney machine.
That's what it, I think it's the
right.
Disney and like
no,
the toys
there was,
and the merchandising.
There was a ton of merchandising.
Like, I actually want the little Millennium Falcon drone. And I don't go into like, oh, I want movie, whatever. But that looks kind of fun. So I don't know.
I've been really impressed with, and I don't know that the movie will be good, but I have been really impressed by the costume designer, or who costume designers that have redone like the Stormtrooper uniforms and all that. So I don't like the rolling robot R2-D2 replacement, but like the Stormtrooper outfits, the new like chrome Stormtrooper outfit, the TIE Fighter outfits, those are sharp. Like to me, they're nostalgic of the original series, but they're a progression of it. I think it's really nice.
One thing that's sort of odd as I think about it with the trailer, and though there's nothing spoilery, but there seem to be fewer kind of like other alien species showing up in the, maybe because
yeah.
Lucas kind of went nuts with that in 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I think so.
Where there was just so many of them and it got incomprehensible after a while, but.
Well, yeah. It just wasn't that, but I hate to keep harping on this, but it's like so many of his, I guess, species resembled races here on Earth, and a lot of them I found not offensive, but a little offensive. I mean, come on, like the Japanese stuff was whatever.
The Trade Federation,
Jamaican,
where they were all very like
yeah.
Mandarin. Like,
that's some old school, you know, post World War II kind of. I don't know. I didn't like it all that much, and it was just too easy too. You know, it's okay.
Yeah,
you know, the guy in the junkyard. I mean, come on. Tight with money, the accent. Don't do that. Yeah, don't do that.
It was so,
bad, Lucas.
So maybe that's why they've.
Yeah, maybe
off
they just shied away from
now
it.
Now it's a human. It's a human focused galaxy in the future.
There
this is the first
robots,
part of the story too.
Right? There's you see robots going around, but yeah, not they're not as many races. Are
nobody's riding Banthas.
Maybe a lot of it's
we've only seen two previews.
Well, they're going back to modeling too, and like using actual sets and getting away from CGI. So maybe you know the move. You know, one of the things that Lucas did was a lot of them. Well, I guess there wasn't a lot of CGI, but yeah, some of the things were pure CGI. You know, Jar Jar was pure CGI.
Not in the original series.
Not in the original ones, but the last three
until he redid them.
Yeah, when he redid them. So yeah,
and then all of a sudden the singing lady with the like long snout with a. She became completely CGI and like danced around like crazy.
I didn't watch those.
Ooh, yeah.
Because I feel like
should,
I don't want to
taint. You should watch
them. No, I'm not.
No,
you can't do that.
You definitely should watch them.
Really?
Because I want you to feel what I feel.
No,
dude. For Star Wars, apparently.
And stop sending me those goat links.
Apparently, it's fairly difficult to see the something that is actually the cut that you would have seen in the theater back when. Four, five, and six were
you know
free.
For a long time.
So there's some stuff
when
out
I
there.
When I originally saw it in theaters, and then you know there weren't VCRs or anything for years. When I finally saw it again, and I don't remember if it was like a replay or if they re-released it or if it was on VHS or what. But when I finally saw it, like I was like, no, but they took out some stuff. Like because I specifically remember when I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it three times in the theater when it came out and. I specifically remember, like, Luke talks about Biggs early in the movie, and then when they're going to go attack the Death Star, he sees Biggs and hugs him and is like, hey, cool, and he's an X-Wing fighter, right, in this Red Squadron. And then when they're attacking the Death Star, Biggs gets killed, and Luke flips out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't in any of the later versions when they re-released it back in the early 80s or whenever they did that. But at some point, they did like a theatrical cut or something, and then it was back in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but if you're going for the various DVDs or any of that that's around, there's it sounds like there are none that really have the kind of... I think the article I read said there was somebody who had like painstakingly kind of gone through and got the pieces from and had put together for themselves one that had... That matched the theatrical release, but not from...
I think
source.
I have DVDs that are the original theatrical version. I have DVDs that are his remakes, his first remakes, and then I have DVDs that are his second remakes. But the second remake set came double DVD, and the second DVD is the original theatrical release.
And he's got a thank you note straight from Lucas saying thanks for all the bucks.
And I have the Blu-rays evidently as well, which aren't the original theatrical. But honestly, like I go and watch the original versions and it was awesome at the time, right? And what they did was amazing. But when you watch it now, like you can really tell like when the land speeder is going over the sand and you can really see like there's a lot of points where it's like, wow, that looks pretty compared by to what's gone on for like 40 years or 35 years or what, how many ever years, many, many, almost 40 years.
A long, you know, long time ago.
You can definitely tell, like it looks dated that, you know, a lot of things. Like you can see the cells sometimes, like when all the TIE fighters are like flying.
Oh yeah, you can, yeah, it's kind of like see like the tracks where the lasers are shooting out of the guns.
Yeah.
Now, are they going to do any nods? I wonder, will J.J. Abrams do any nods? Because, okay, so for instance, in Star Trek, they had the guy in the red shirt not quite make it on the away team. So I'm wondering, like, I just want to see a stormtrooper hit his head on something. That would make me happy.
Or
a little fan service.
Ice cream bucket man from Cloud City.
Yeah, yeah. Or JJ or Jar Jar. Jar Jar get killed. You know, that'd be fine.
Jar Jar's going to be a Sith Lord.
Yeah.
You know who Rilo Ken is? Jar Jar Binks.
Is Lando back?
After extensive plastic surgery.
I don't know.
Is Billy Dee Williams
He's
back? That'd be
bar,
awesome.
A smooth bar with the malt liquors franchise.
I hope he's in it. I hope he's alive. I haven't done my research.
He's in the dry ice city now.
I'm pretty sure Billy
Dee
Williams is still alive.
I would hope so.
He is. I don't know if they, you know, that's a good question.
Lando needs to come back. Or maybe they won't bring him back until, you know, the second of the iteration, which I guess would be
to match
eight.
When he was in the first one and the second.
Yeah. And also I'm hoping that they maybe like, well, I don't know. I heard they were going to put a Wookiee in the slave girl outfit, maybe. I don't know. That's why I don't go after spoilers anymore.
Oh,
that, yeah,
maybe they're going to put Grumpy.
Ooh.
You know, that
Lumpy,
was
yeah.
Actually,
Bumpy?
I,
Lumpy? Was it Bumpy?
Lumpy was one of the sons, yeah.
I've heard,
Lumpy
know,
for
like,
sure.
Basically
Scratchy
Abrams
was one of them.
Gone back in the Star Trek, it's like And you know what? At this point, I don't feel bad spoiling it because the movie's been out and the DVD has been out.
What? Just a second. Which one?
Hold on.
Star Trek Into Darkness has Khan in it.
I haven't watched it.
So, well, it has Khan in it.
That goes from the very beginning,
really?
Though.
Like,
you kind of know from the beginning.
From
but you don't know.
Wyandark's Coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. Cowboy but, hat.
So since J.J. Abrams is
leisurely
kind of
going attitude.
Back to the original material and kind of reworking it, I wouldn't be surprised if half of the next movie is the Christmas special.
Did he have the plastic chest with the gold medallion that didn't move?
Mod.
The reworked. They'll have somebody else will have to play B. Arthur.
I was about to say B. Arthur is sadly no longer with us. Betty White. I would like to see Betty White as a Jedi. I would. I'm going to be very unabashedly about that.
And
running
the whole,
a bar.
Just out there.
White trash Luke fixing his X-wing out in the front yard. I did actually see the Star Wars Christmas special on television.
It is. So
I don't remember. I don't remember. I might have seen it, but I don't remember
the whole white trash Luke thing where he's working on his X-wing to try and show up because it's all like video calls to for Life Day on Wookiee World or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I saw it on YouTube about 3 or 4 years ago.
And mm-hmm. I remembered that was one of those where I, even back then, I thought, well, geez, that's pretty white trash, the whole, my X-wing's broken down. I got it in blocks in the front yard.
Again, it was low-hanging, poking at stereotypes. Low-hanging fruit. Again, bad Lucas. Although he does control what's out there. Like, that's one of those things where you probably legitimately can't find a copy anymore, and the copies that are out there are very rare. Because he was embarrassed
at
the Christmas special. Well, I mean, yeah, because now you can't stop the internet. But for a while, that was unobtainable.
You
couldn't find it.
Yeah,
for
a long time.
Through the 80s, through the 90s.
Yeah.
And it was bad videotape, copies of videotape.
Yeah, and
well,
it still
the one
is,
on YouTube,
the YouTube copy, yeah.
The YouTube's, like, got commercials in it from, like, the Midwest somewhere.
We totally derailed the news.
Well, other news.
The info shot, yeah. Someone's brain is bleeding.
Yeah, no, in other stuff, this one, during the World Series, Kansas City and the Mets, I hopefully that's not spoiling anything for anybody.
Is it World Series?
I haven't watched it yet.
Did they? Is it over?
It's
over.
Okay.
It was Kansas City and the Mets, and so there was games in Kansas City, and in the first game or in one of the World Series games, Google's internet network, Google Fiber's in Kansas City, it went down, and so some people missed part of the game. Well, Comcast.
Does Google Fiber the service? Google Fiber the service went down?
Yeah, the whole internet and TV went down, and so people missed part of the World Series. So so Comcast Infinity posted a snide comment on Facebook about Google Fiber's hiccup during the televised pro sports event, and then the best thing was Google didn't do anything to reply. Comcast's own customers posting on the Facebook page just took it apart. They made they made it just.
Comcast was down for 15 minutes this morning.
The first reply to the post said, "Screw yourself, Xfinity. Google Fiber has failed once, and you are failing continuously." And it got better from there. So their attempt to be snarky just really got.
Their own customers upset.
Just don't internet. Some people shouldn't internet.
Well, don't make fun. You better make sure you're perfect. If you're gonna try and claim Google is a failure at something, you better be the world's success at it. And then here's if in case you need a job, you want to get into programming, but you only want to learn really old Fortran and assembly languages. Mm-hmm. NASA needs a programmer for that, for Voyager 1 and 2 to keep them going.
Fortran?
They're not hiring anybody
or
yet
assembly.
To fulfill
some
role.
Of its own specialized stuff.
The guy is going
rewrite
to
the firmware.
The guy is going to retire next year. His name is Larry Zottarelli, the last original Voyager engineer still on the project, is retiring after a long and storied history at JPL. While there's still a few people around who worked on the original project, the job of keeping it going will fall to someone else. It's going to require coding, but it won't be in Ruby on Rails or Python, not C or C++. Go a little further back.
VB.
To the assembly languages used in early computing. No COBOL? Can you breeze through Fortran?
Yes.
Remember your ALGOL?
I never did Algol.
Those fancy new languages from the late 1950s? Then you might be the person for the job.
Yeah, I never did Assembly either.
Suzanne Dodd, program manager for the Voyager program, said in a phone interview, it was state-of-the-art in 1975. But that's basically 40 years old if you want to think of it that way.
But it's possible that there may still be Fortran code being run at NASA that I wrote.
Ooh. Or a shame.
Or that I modded.
Says, as the new engineer, you have a few tasks ahead of you and about 64 kilobytes of memory to work with.
It's like an Arduino.
The Voyager twins sport NASA's earliest onboard computers, a step away from the sequencers used on projects like ISE-E3. A sequencer uses radio or audio tones to turn on an instrument. But with an onboard computer, more functions can be automatic, which is more helpful if your spacecraft is more than 12 billion miles away. That's 17 hours by radio. And only certain antennas work with it. Voyager 2, now moving downward in the ecliptic of the solar system, can only be reached by the Canberra antenna of the Deep Space Network. So we need to get Jay to stop by while he's on that side of the world.
KD5 should maybe apply for that. He's got some.
Yeah, so he worked on a specialty software for the launch abort sequence, right? Is that what he worked on?
Yeah. Okay. The main thing with this is and Pete, if you mentioned it, I apologize. I've been trying to like get my thing configured, but it's running out of juice. Their batteries are almost dead, so they've got to go in, rewrite the software to be able to shut itself on, shut itself off, and try and eke out another 10 years of power of what it's got. So that's the main. That's why they have to get in there and rewrite it before it's completely dead.
Yeah, the last software overhaul was in 1990 after the 1989 Neptune encounter and at the beginning of the Interstellar mission. The flight software was basically completely rewritten in order to have a spacecraft that could be nearly autonomous and continue sending back data to us, even if we lost communications with it. It has a looping routine of activities that it does automatically on board, and then we augment that with sequences that we send up every 3 months. Let's see. The original engineer said this subsystem takes 3.2 watts of power. Well, it really took 3 watts, but they wanted to be conservative when they built the spacecraft. Now we're at the point in the mission where we're trying to get rid of the margins and get the actual numbers.
You know what? They could save some memory space if they got rid of some of the letters in Voyager's name.
Like V'ger? Dun, dun, dun.
So, The clock is ticking. There will be 6 months to a year of on-the-job training, but that's about it. Dodd isn't holding out hope for some up-and-coming young coder who works on the project for decades to come. She says instead it's closer to walking up and down the halls of JPL hoping to nab and experience someone slightly younger than the retirees with enough of a basis in assembly languages to keep the spacecraft going. Yeah, nobody's going to be coming fresh out of college.
I was going
to
say, there's got to be. I mean, because when I was in college, there were still people taking like IBM 360 assembly classes, right? And that was the late 80s when they were doing that. So there's got to be people in their early, mid, maybe late 40s that could do some of that stuff.
Last line in the article is, just a warning for would-be programmers, these languages aren't on Code Academy. Stack Overflow is not going to help you with this one.
There is like a small community of people that are into like, you know, old and esoteric languages and that are, you know, bringing stuff back. And, you know, so maybe it could be, and it probably wouldn't be a super young person, but, you know, maybe it could be, you know, 20-year-old something or other, you know, that's into that. The thing is, just to get there, it takes a lot of knowledge below that, so it's not something that you just pick up immediately. You kind of have to go learn it
and you're not
going to
like
that out.
Shop your skills around to like
no.
The newest startup.
It'll get you like other geek cred, but that's about it. Like,
yeah,
you know, Flickit, I would think it was cool. Flickit probably think it's cool, but
yeah.
Well, in other navigational news, apparently with all the videos of idiots doing things they shouldn't with their Tesla autopilot. It sounds like Tesla is going to put some constraints on the autopilot to, quote, minimize the possibility of people doing crazy things. Roughly 40,000 Model S cars currently have the autopilot mode available to them, but it's only a beta release. Musk said the system will learn over time and get better, and that's exactly what it's doing. And there actually are people who've talked about that when they first started using it, it didn't work as well as they had hoped.
So what exactly
it had improved?
What does it do? I'm kind of fuzzy. Like, how much of an autopilot is it?
The crazy people who take their hands off it were like using it in the city. You're supposed to do it on like the highway or, you know, commuting type traffic.
So it tracks the road. So it's not just controlling speed at this point. It's steering as well.
It'll do steering. I think it mostly it stays in its lane unless you tell it. If you put on the blinker, it'll change lanes when it knows it's clear.
Hmm.
So it,
that's pretty autonomous. I mean, that's a little. Is that legal? I guess.
Apparently, you know, but you're supposed to keep your hands on the wheel even when autopilot is on. And there's all kinds of videos of people with basically, you know, their hands up in the air.
People in the back seat taking a nap.
Yeah, really. Oh, God. There was a video that I think it was viral for a reason that showed this guy in a big kind of a big rig sitting there, and he's riding, and you can tell he's kind of getting the sleep jerks, you know, where his eyes sort of close, and and so then he takes and reaches down and gets this like toolbox and puts it down by his feet, like on the gas pedal, and then he like gets up, stands up from the seat, and goes back behind and lays down. You know, there's
this video. This has got to be a joke.
And please then it kind of pans from him laying in the back to the driver's seat, and you can see the wheel is sort of moving, and you can see, you know, at first you think, oh, well, they're just sitting still. It's in a parking lot. And you look, and you can tell it's going down the road, and there's cars going the other way. And then the last shot, it pans to the front. It's being towed. He's in the truck. He's in the cab while it's being towed. And so it's like, oh, okay, well, that makes more sense. But, yeah, no, oh, man, you know, I could come over for a lot more shows if I had – if we have somebody out there who wants to donate a Model S with the extended range and the autopilot, mm-hmm. then I could come in and do more shows. Of course, that would be like half a pledge drive's worth of the cost of half a KPFT pledge drive to do. Speaking of electric cars, you know, some of these seem overhyped research things. This one comes from fizz.org, and so it's not so hypey. It's not so going viral, but it's more research-oriented. Scientists have developed a working laboratory demonstrator of a lithium-oxygen battery, which has very high energy density, is more than 90% efficient, and to date can be recharged more than 2,000 times, showing how several of the problems that hold back lithium-type devices could be solved. Lithium-oxygen or lithium-air batteries have been touted as the ultimate battery due to their theoretical energy density, which is 10 times that of a lithium-ion battery. Yeah, 10 times. So let's just sit for a moment and imagine. You know, so your 8-hour battery on your laptop would become an 80-hour battery with your laptop. That kind of high density would be comparable to that of gasoline, which would enable an electric car that is a fifth of the cost and a fifth of the weight of those currently on the market, and could drive a long distance on a single charge. Because think about it. You know, say 10 times. Well, if you had the same battery density as in a Tesla, you're talking about being able to go 2,000 miles on a charge. That could be interesting.
And this has been done in a lab with like 3 molecules.
Well, they don't
2,000 mile wide lab.
they've actually developed a lab-based demonstrator of an actual lithium oxygen battery, which has they've measured it. It has the higher capacity, it has the increased energy efficiency and improved stability over previous attempts.
I can't remember which one it was. Was it lithium oxygen, the one that could like recharge in like a matter of seconds? Because it just whatever the substrate was, however it's set up, it like just the electrons just immediately filled, like it didn't have to go through the whole like charge cycle stuff.
They don't, in this article, they don't say anything about
that. Actually, may have been something with
the speed of charge.
Cause
I know
like carbon
the
nanotubes
things.
Or something.
This uses a highly porous fluffy carbon electrode made from graphene.
Oh, graphene.
One atom thick sheets of carbon atoms and additives that alter the chemical reactions at work in the battery, making it more stable and efficient.
That graphene is nice stuff.
This one, and this is why, you know, this one is more accurate. While the results reported in the journal Science are promising, the researchers caution that a practical lithium air battery still remains at least a decade away. But you can see where they're, if they're initially getting the kind of high density and reliability, that's a good sign. And frankly, I would think that the pressure of the market and the need for this kind of stuff to improve a lot of our how things work, that this is going to be important.
We have awakened. We have summoned Jay Lee from the future. Yeah, he says greetings from the future. Yeah, he's an IRC.
He's an IRC. Awesome.
Yeah, he said.
Did he listen to the beginning of the show? Did it shock him?
They just got back from Russia.
Russell, three L's. Russell, there we go. And I'm sure there's quite a bit of lag if he's listening from New Zealand.
Yeah, really. Geez, that's some distance. Plus, through the, I know they've improved it, but I remember back in the early days, the internet, where the pipe that went to Australia and to New Zealand and Australia was just.
I was gonna say,
I wonder what trans
cables that would take. Like if it would go to Japan or if it would go the other way.
Probably down through Australia, and then hobbits carry the packets the last mile.
they put them on sheep back to.
I mean, it could go directly to Africa. I'm just trying to. I'm thinking like what path it would take
through the Pacific to.
It might to Japan maybe or to the. Maybe to Australia.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get Jaylee's IP address, and we're going to trace her to it.
Hey, there you go.
There's a really, really awesome site, and I can't remember the name of it, that shows you all the underwater cables.
Yeah.
And it shows you all of them, and then you can click on one, and it'll show you how long it is, who owns it, when it was dropped, all kinds of information. It's a really cool website. It's graphic-based, driven.
Well, that's been in the news lately because the Russians have been apparently lurking around the major kind of choke points, and if they went in deep and cut the fiber, it would take a long time to fix. I mean, there's breaks all the time.
Yeah.
But if you go hit the weak spots, which there are plenty, and it's not like somebody went down there and like set the cable.
Well, somebody's
up.
Been doing it in California, right? For the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
the substations aren't really protected, and somebody knows where they are, and there've been like, I forget, 7 or 13 cuts in the last 2 or 3 years, and they've never found the person that did it.
So you know, the Russians though have been like, their submarines have been hanging around and stuff like that, and so it has been in the news, and they've shown the charts where they show where all of them go and all that, but it would be fairly ugly. The thing about it is, though, the countries that would benefit, you know, if they like killed the whole internet for the rest of us, you know, and, you know, throw America into chaos or whatever, any country that's got sufficient technology to go and, you know, wreck the cables isn't going to want to cut them because they like their internet too. And they need it as well. So, you know, yes, if Somalia could muster a navy that could cut the stuff, they wouldn't care because they don't have internet. But anybody who's got a submarine that can actually
Nigeria.
Get down there,
they want them.
They make tons of
money. They make their money from
the
that.
They're trying to get a submarine as part of a deal to get money from a prince out to one of the navies. But. Oh, well, and so even though we're coming up to the end of the first hour and we haven't even finished the news, if you have Android, you need to be careful. Attackers are creating rogue versions of popular Android applications that compromise the security of devices and are extremely hard to remove. Researchers from mobile security firm Lookout have found more than 20,000 samples of Trojanized apps, typically fully functional copies of applications like Candy Crush, Facebook, Google Now, New York Times, Okta, Snapchat, Twitter, or WhatsApp, but with malicious code added to them. The goal of these rogue apps is to aggressively display advertisements on devices. A scary development, though, is that unlike traditional adware, they root the device when they get installed in order to prevent users from removing them. In the Android world, rooting a device refers to the process of obtaining administrative privileges, the root account. An application with root access can break out of its restricted sandbox and take control of the entire device, its applications, and data. So here's the deal. If you only download apps from Google Play, then you'll be okay. These are the Trojanized applications are mostly distributed through third-party app stores, so there's no direct threat if you use Google Play. However, there are legitimate reasons for users to use third-party app stores, which often have apps that are not allowed in Google Play because they can't meet the store's various terms. Online gambling and porn apps are two examples. So maybe you should either – I think this might be where you would want to get a separate device that you use for those things that you don't care about. Or maybe think about not getting gambling and porn apps on your Android tablet or phone. The highest number of detections for Trojanized applications in countries Lookout recorded the highest number of detections for the Trojanized applications in countries like the U.S., Germany, Iran, Russia, India, Jamaica, Sudan, Brazil, Mexico, and Indonesia. The researchers identified three separate families of adware apps that automatically root devices, dubbed Shidun, ShuaNet, and ShiftyBug, which they believe could be related. So, think about that one before you download that porn gambling app that you from that third party place. That do you really want to get ads for all your apps on your Android device? And then finally, this one actually, it's sort of boring, but the problem is it's so extensive that it makes it a bigger deal. vBulletin, which is a bulletin board software that lots and lots of places use. They think there is a huge zero-day vulnerability in it. And if you want to hear what that vulnerability is and anything more about it, you'll have to stay tuned after these crazy things that it affects. This weird tip to help you avoid this zero-day.
You won't believe what happened next.
Well, so that is the first
number
hour.
Five is especially disturbing.
You'll find that the most shocking. So, yes, with the unique and different staff, I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And he's...
Ooh.
And he's...
Do it again.
Groovehouse.
Do it again.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Do it again.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
One more time.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Woof!
Remington College is holding its annual Cuts for Cause event to collect food for families in need. Throughout November, anyone who brings in a can of food or other non-perishable food donation gets a free haircut, manicure, or pedicure. All the food collected will go to local food banks. For Remington College Greens Point Campus, call 281-885-4490 for appointments. Salon hours are Monday through Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. and every other Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The salon at Remington is located at 11310 Greens Crossing, Suite 300 in Houston. For Remington College Webster Campus, call 281-554-1790 for appointments. The salon hours are Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. and on Tuesdays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. The salon at Remington is located at 20985 Gulf Freeway in Webster, KPFT, Houston.
KPFT recientemente ha finalizado su campaña de membresías que tuvo al aire. Si usted fue uno de los muchos radioescuchas quienes se unieron a esta campaña, muchas gracias. Antes de que lo sepa, su sobre de membresía llegará por correo. No olvide mandar su donación. El gran sentimiento que usted obtiene cuando apoya KPFT es mejor una vez que usted haya colocado su cheque en el correo. Y si usted perdió la oportunidad de unirse y apoyar las noticias, la música u otra gran programación que usted escucha cada día, aún hay tiempo. Únase por vía internet visitando la página www.kpft.org y haga su parte. Gracias una vez más por apoyar a la radio de la comunidad. Esta es libre de comerciales. Patrocinada por Radio Escuchas, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. And now we return you to TechBee.
Flick to show. Flick to show.
All right, Freeform Jam.
We're still trying to trace route to Jay, but we're stalled out at about 25 hops.
He lost his ping.
It got to New York, so we're thinking maybe it goes...
New York to Europe, maybe?
New York to Europe and then land across.
It could have gone... I think there's a line that goes from New York to the Middle East, so it might do that, and then go through the Saudi Arabian peninsula,
like
through
the
peninsula,
India,
and then
India,
down,
right.
Yeah.
What's that strait there
that's between... Africa and
Gibraltar.
Is that it? Like through the Red Sea or whatever?
I think so.
I thought Gibraltar was up by
Spain. No, the Mediterranean. Gibraltar's at the mouth to the Atlantic, to the Mediterranean, and then what's
it's like right there at Egypt and
Turkey and
yeah, I don't know if Turkey wraps all the way around.
Hormuz.
It's like Constantinople is on either side of it or something like that, I think. Good question.
You mean Istanbul?
So where are we looking again?
What's happening?
The strait, like there at the, not the Red Sea, but between Egypt and...
Yeah, I mean, we're on it, so just tell me where we're looking. Between Egypt and the Red Sea, so not the Red
Sea.
It's
not the Strait of Hormuz.
Gulf of Aden.
There's the Suez Canal goes across.
That's the Suez Canal is one part of it, yeah.
Hmm. Well, that was easy.
Next question.
Next on Geography Time. What's a small landlocked country in Central Asia? Yeah.
Any one of them?
What is
landlocked Central
what
Asia?
What was the question again?
Small landlocked country in Central Asia.
Laos touches sea. Laos.
Yeah.
And that was no map.
That's the one
no
I was thinking of.
Yeah,
like, because a lot of that, I'm thinking like everything kind of has beaches. But
I guess
a couple
it's
don't.
The Suez Canal. I know there's some other. The Bosporus is the thing between Turkey and Greece. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, I was thinking of Suez Canal.
Next on Geography.
Because I do think there's a cable. There's at least one cable that goes through there, cuts through there.
So on this V-Bulletin Zero Day attack, so if you have a V-Bulletin, if you're running a V-Bulletin bulletin board, download the patch and put it in. They released the security patch Monday night, just hours after reports surfaced that a hack on the developer's site leaked password data and other sensitive information belonging to almost 500,000 subscribers. V-Bulletin officials have put in place a mandatory password reset for all users after discovering it was subjected to a hack attack. They went on to warn that the attacker may have accessed customer IDs and encrypted passwords on their system. A separate post on the V-Bulletin site makes reference to a security patch for versions 5.1.4 through 5.1.9 of the V-Bulletin Connect software package. So, but they didn't put it out with an explicit warning that there is a critical vulnerability in V-Bulletin. Ars Technica apparently asked V-Bulletin officials to clarify the reports and to confirm or deny the speculation they have generated, but so far, no answer. So, over the weekend, a person going by the handle Cold Zero, with a zero for the last O, took to various
social media and...
That's a nod to Zero Cool from the movie Hackers, 15, 20 years now. Yeah.
took to various social media and web forums, including a discussion group, to claim he breached the vbulletin.com website and obtained personal information belonging to users. As proof he provided, there's a screenshot in the post if you follow it. There's also a video been posted to YouTube and additional data on a Facebook page, but those were taken down. Cold Zero also claimed to use the same vulnerability to compromise forums for Foxit software. At the time of the article, both of those forums were unavailable. Any software, keep an eye out, and when there's patches, you want to look at, you want to be pretty sure that you've. Here's one. Already, some sites that rely on vBulletin, including the heavily targeted DefCon.org, have suspended user forums until the uncertainty is cleared up. There were similar fears over vBulletin security a couple years ago. So, every week there's a hack.
Pretty much. It's just everything's weak sauce these days.
And the tough part is regular media gets tired of this kind of thing because it's not – it has to get bigger, So, it was only 500,000 bulletin board passwords. There were no credit card numbers involved, so they didn't care.
But unfortunately, a lot of people reuse passwords.
Yeah, recycle, reduce, reuse. Yeah, that's how you should do it.
Well, there was that whole thing last week where you could do the poetry thing, where it was the generating poetry, like the little magnets for your refrigerator to generate your
it's
password.
Cool. I do like haiku stuff for my passwords. Like right now, my password is 575. Just the numbers, But it's a haiku, so that counts as poetry.
So I'm going back to the cable thing.
Oh, yeah, I found out where they are.
That website is Submarine Cable Map.
There's a couple. There's that. There's Telegeography. Has a pretty nice
SubmarineCableMap.com is really nice. Like, it's got all of them, and you can click on them and get all the information about it. But looking at it,
it goes to the U.S.
It would be a little surprising if it went the route through the Atlantic.
No,
because it's a lot of hops, because almost all the ones from the U.S. that go that direction go to, Spain or France.
Well, we did time out.
Bounce around through the Mediterranean and then go, through there or all the way around. And, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, New Zealand has two direct connections. There's one back into Sydney, and then there are a couple that go back up into, it looks like, Seattle and L.A. And then they're kind of the names are kind of cool. Project Runway is one of the drops. Then there is the South Pacific Island Network that connects it back. So not too many. They just have New Zealand has one way out, one way back to the mainland, and then one node into what looks like, L.A.
Wow. And so the thing.
So the U.S. definitely isn't listening into what's going on in New Zealand. There's no way. Isn't it odd how a lot of the traffic comes to the U.S. no matter what?
They've got four that go back to Australia.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the two main. It just goes back to Australia.
So the Wi-Fi seems to be working, so I've turned off my...
I'm on the other.
I was going to say, three that go back to Australia look to be pretty close to each other. The fourth one is a little bit away. But yeah, then they've got one that's going in
the
that's a very different direction.
The one that's a little bit away is the one that got snagged
on the ankle. Looks like it goes by...
the ankle of Amelia Earhart's skeleton.
So they go through Tonga, American Samoa, Western Samoa... it goes kind of technically through Hawaii. And then, from Hawaii, the cable goes on back to L.A.
And it looks like there's a Hawaii to New Zealand one, right?
That's what we're talking about, yeah.
The Southern Cross does the one that goes up.
Oh, yeah?
It actually looks like it starts in California and goes maybe to Hawaii or somewhere.
Yeah, Hawaii is a stop.
Goes down to New Zealand, bounces over to Australia, and then bounces all the way back up and goes to, Oregon or Washington.
Yeah, and they've even got this is interesting. It's kind of neat to see. You take all this for granted, but really they're just there's still just a couple dozen undersea cables that carry all the world's traffic.
Yeah, and in the deep Pacific,
I was gonna say that's a long cable. Yeah,
there's not much to mess with it. Essentially, as long as it's protected, as long as they...
I think they have repeaters. I think they have repeaters on them.
Yeah, they have to, yeah.
Yeah.
And
every 100 meters over Cat 5. Joking. The hub came unplugged.
But even with, you know, even with long throw fiber, right, long range fiber, there's still a lot.
Oh yeah,
of
no, you've got to have it. Yeah, that's got to be ugly, and I would assume a lot of that goes pretty deep where they're laying.
And at some point, they have to pull them up to replace the batteries. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I forget if it's on YouTube. I forget where I saw it. But there are a couple of videos out there that actually look at the ships that, you know, pull those up and do maintenance. And that's the other issue too. There's only a handful of ships that are, you know, they can do maintenance. They can go repair it,
well,
and they're pretty much
the time,
always
the
cruising.
Cuts happen. Near shore, where they can actually like get
yeah, usually somebody's
to it
pulling
or...
a
well, like the Somali pirates were really bad about doing that for a while,
dropping anchor and like dragging the
dredging
anchor.
Or yeah, accidentally.
Yeah, normal accidents, but if somebody intentionally like looks at it, figures out where's the worst, most vulnerable point.
Well, it's also really convenient time if you get somebody to, you know, accidentally drag an anchor across. It's a really good time for. Nation states to go in and put listening tapping devices mm-hmm. on those while they repair them, so that once they're repaired, they don't realize that stuff got added.
Yeah, or if you just want a nation to go dark for, you know, at 6 hours while you stage a coup, you know, that's a good way to cut them off from everyone else, especially when you get into companies that have one way in, one way out.
I think it's all just a cover for a huge international heist.
Diamond heist.
Yeah. They're going to rob a casino. It's Ocean's 27 or something. Ah, well, I think we've actually completed one segment, so we can go to the next one.
Woo.
And then... Yeah, this laptop has good speakers on it, especially when you turn them up high enough.
I say, it's too bad Jay's here, not here to, like... go, okay, well, what's the next segment thing that we're going to do now?
Let's be very meta about the show. Should I mention the promo now?
So,
yes.
Apparently, this one's interesting. There's a startup called Zerodium that had a $1 million bounty set on hacking the iPhone. And somebody over the weekend claimed the bounty, apparently. They claimed the bounty set by the new startup Zerodium, according to its founder, Chauki Bekrar. I'm sure I'm butchering his name. But he is a notorious merchant of unknown or zero-day vulnerabilities, so butchering his name is no big deal. So the tweet was, our iOS zero-day bounty has expired, and we have one winning team who made a remote browser-based iOS 9.1 9.2b jailbreak untethered. Congrats. The challenge consisted of finding a way to remotely jailbreak a new iPhone or iPad running the latest version of Apple's mobile operating system, iOS, allowing the attacker to install any app he or she wants with full privileges. The initial exploit, according to the terms of the challenge, had to come through Safari, Chrome, or a text or multimedia message. That's essentially meant that a participant needed to find a series or a chain of unknown zero-day bugs, not just one, according to Patrick Wardle, a researcher that works at security firm Synac. For example, the Chinese white hat hacking team Pangu already found a way to jailbreak the new iPhone, but that method didn't work remotely. So this was not an easy challenge. But somebody apparently figured it out, and I'm guessing it's worth $1 million if somebody can remotely install software on iPhones anywhere, that it must be worth it, especially, you know, remotely, not, you know, if you have the thing in your hand and can hook it up to a cable, that's a little different thing, but basically being able to do it through a browser or through a text message. That's kind of hardcore. So that one's an Apple one. And here's an Apple patent, so this gets ahead, that indicates that maybe at some point there won't be, like, mechanical keys on a keyboard.
Did they patent going through multiple strings of things in order to remotely
install
software on an iPhone?
It was $1 million patent for them. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office on Tuesday granted Apple a patent for a low-travel keyboard design with force touch-like sensors that measure the pressure placed on a key when a user presses or rests a finger on it. As summarized by Apple Insider, the exhaustive patent filing details how the keyboard would have a switchless QWERTY input mechanism rather than mechanical switches, allowing for less key travel and potentially thinner keyboards.
I don't know if that's a good thing. I do like the idea that if you're really big on the keyboard, it comes out in all caps.
A lot of people really like the Force Touch. I haven't had a chance to play with it enough to really get it to get a feel for it. But the Force Touch thing on the iPhone 6S, if people are liking how that works and like how that feels, then I could see where that the next step would make sense to replace the keyboard with it. And but you get the feel of it, and you don't have to have all that mechanical space.
Now, is one that doesn't have like an iPhone 6S, is that just like haptic feedback? Is that just a fancy word?
Okay, basically, that's what the Force Touch thing. Although it also has the whole deal about knowing how much pressure, that if you push down on an iPhone 6S, it does sort of the equivalent of like a right click kind of thing, where it'll pop up contextual menus and such. So there's that one, and then. You know, the iPhone 6S is still kind of,
it's new.
The new thing. So, of course, there are iPhone 7 rumors out. Although, this one, I think it's Ming-Chi Kuo of KGI Securities, who has good rumors. But this one, to me, sounds like anybody could make up something like this. After the iPhone 7 one, I'll tell you the iPhone 8 rumor that you could do after it. The rumor is that it'll have 3 gigs of RAM instead of 2 and an A10 processor. So my rumor is that the iPhone 9 will have 4 gigs of RAM and the A12 processor. So I'm out there first. You heard it here first. It's kind of a...
it's not really saying much.
I don't know that really tells us a lot. The iPhone 6 Plus uses 1 gig of RAM. That's the memory. There's the difference between RAM and the hard drive, I guess, like storage. So on your iPhone, there's the RAM that runs all your apps, and then there's the storage. So the size of your iPhone, a 16-gig iPhone has 16 gigs of storage. But it has 1 gig of RAM. The 6 Plus had 1 gig of RAM. The iPhone 6S goes to 2 gigs. And then apparently the rumor is that they're going to add yet another gigabyte of memory to the iPhone 7 Plus. I guess at some point, it seems that, the burden of apps keeps growing. And so I've noticed in people, I support people who are using Macs on business networks. And I've found that now there are people with 4 gigs who are starting to get to where that's starting to slow down their machine. Their machine is having to use virtual memory to handle the basics of the day. And so you want to bump them up. But I guess the same thing's been happening on iPhones and iPads. It's likely a new phone, iPhone 7, will debut in September of 2016. There's no truth so far to the rumor that it's going to actually be a holographic drone that orbits your head while you while you use it, and that Siri will actually be a little tiny hologram that stands on your desk and
of a Martian
says, "Help me, Obi-Wan, you're our only hope." So at least there's and here's another one that I just you kind of go, oh, what a shocking idea for a rumor. Kuo has mentioned that the iPhone 7 is on track to be Apple's thinnest iPhone yet, with the company said to be aiming to make the 2016 upgrade as thin as 6 millimeters. That would be even thinner than the latest iPod Touch and the iPod Air 2. So we will file that all under interesting rumors, but I don't know that those aren't. That's not as interesting as Force Touch to me. I mean, the stuff like, oh, well, the things it already does? Well, there'll be more. It'll be thinner. Just add "er" on. More RAM, more processor. So there's that.
So the iPhone 6S is, what, like 7.5 or something?
Could be. I'll trust your estimate as you squint at the edge of your iPhone there. And... now the long-awaited, much-promised new bumper for a new
Donna Dun.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip? A snart tank.
I never realized how much you and Wapner sound alike. That's eerie. Or the announcer, rather.
Judge Judy. Better than sounding like Judge Judy. So, yeah, so there's a few new things. This time, for some reason, lots of new sound-type deals and a phone that may be good for Barrett. Here's one. So, Moogs, you know, if you listen to the show...
Or Jay.
The intro, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've gone longer without breaking a phone than he has now.
Because Jay,
yeah, broke his,
oh, Jay broke his phone on vacation yeah. in New Zealand.
Although he did get the screen repaired pretty quickly, it looked like.
But he dropped it and he shattered the screen.
New Zealand. They... It was quickly done. He went to the Apple embassy in New Zealand and they, oh, this will fit.
Well, it fixed tomorrow.
It's actually got Saran wrap and silly putty, but it looks pretty good. Yeah, you know, shows all the icons on the silly putty.
That's mohair.
No, but you know, if you listen to the show regularly, you know the theme is the Moog cookbook. And so it's Moog synthesizers. Well, this guy made mini Moog synthesizers out of Lego bricks. If 10,000 people approve his proposal on Lego ideas, Lego might actually create a kit and sell them. So you can go retro analog with these miniaturized versions of the classic mini Moog synthesizer. The Model D and the Voyager Old School are both represented in a small display set that would look great on the shelf of any synth geek, electronic buff, or general music lover.
So is that going to be the guts, or is there a kit that you put in the guts for the Moog?
Well, it'd use Legos. These are built out of Legos. The thing is, though, I'm guessing, I don't know if they actually make sound.
Yeah, that's the question. Do they actually work?
The control panels are not intended to be a one-to-one reproduction of the control panels of the instruments, which would be practically impossible at this scale. Instead, this is from the person who did it, I chose to simply suggest the knobs and switches and panel prints with simple elements.
Give it time. I bet someone will actually make it work.
It does have an accurate representation of the keyboard. So, yeah, well, I guess they – oh, okay. So their initial pictures look pretty fair size, but as you look at them closer, they're pretty tiny, I think. So I don't know. I guess if you're that much of a synth geek, then
– Yeah, those look like about maybe 5 or 6 inches across. Like, I thought they were real size,
like
yeah.
Like a foot or two.
Like a Lego desk is what I was hoping for.
Yeah, so – boo.
So they're kind of cool.
So they're the size of like a Lego 2x3 brick or 2x4 brick?
Just about. Like the main, you know, like the little bitty round pieces, the light pieces that would go over one round, you know, Lego brick cap. Mm-hmm. It looks like they are about maybe, is it about 10 across, Pete? Guessing?
Yeah.
About maybe 12 across. Not very wide. So you're talking about like a 12 thing brick.
They give you like a stylus so you can press the buttons.
Yeah, the Pete says it doesn't work. He's dashing my hopes and dreams here.
I mean, from looking at it, it looked like the buttons are pressable, but they're not.
Once you realize it's tiny, it changes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, frankly, they could just stamp it all out of one piece of plastic. I don't know why they would need to make it out of... Because think about when you give it to some kid and they take it all apart, how are you ever going to get it back to looking like... It's like when you give them the Millennium Falcon Lego and they take it apart and... It's never going to look like the Millennium Falcon again. And then here's one just for, you know, for some light listening at home. Sennheiser has some new headphones out. They're called the Orpheus headphones. In 1991, Sennheiser released the original Orpheus. At the time, they were claimed to be the best headphones ever made. The new Sennheiser Orpheus headphones bring back the nameplate and world-beating performance. They're electrostatic headphones designed to work with the included tube amplifier and digital audio converter to deliver unrivaled sonic reproduction.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm afraid to see how much these things
cost.
With the
amp seated in a glass housing on a solid block of Carrera marble.
Oh, that's nice. So, they actually like give you your own preamp for the headphones.
And using four channels in parallel for both the right and left side for increased accuracy.
It has built-in DA?
Yes.
We're now in the
five-figure
mark.
To further reduce distortion, the headphones have a pair of cool Class A MOSFET amps integrated into the ear cups to eliminate the reactance of the cable and deliver a dynamic range of 8 hertz to more than 100 kilohertz, as well as the lowest distortion ever measured in a sound reproduction system.
But do they have long-throw non-oxygen copper and a little AA battery?
They ship with monster cables.
Onto it.
And now how much would you pay?
The base looks amazing.
The price,
I just pulled up.
The price of this is $55,000.
So Tesla, you're in You're in used Tesla territory
so
at that point.
For your Beats, you know.
you could buy Dre
for
$60,000.
You got to do this. And I mean, this would be okay for my car, but what am I going to listen to at home?
I take it to work. Not for my house.
Pound billionaire problems.
And then finally, the Motorola Droid Turbo 2. Apparently this is the droid you've been looking for. The subhead is the Volvo of phones.
It's boxy, but good.
They said, we want our gadgets to be beautiful. Maybe it started with the phonograph, the Princess phone, Braun radios, or the iMac.
Are Volvos beautiful? I
yes,
missed something
that's not
here.
How Hold I on.
The Forester is so. No, that's Subaru. Never mind.
Tech capabilities advance, miracles become commodities, and soon it's not enough for our gear to do everything. It has to look good, too. This creates a catch-22 in the world of phones. You buy a flagship device and you expect a handheld powerhouse built out of premium materials with elegant curves, maybe a wraparound display. But none of that matters if the phone has a smashed screen. So we put protective cases on them and hide all the craftsmanship that got us to buy them in the first place. Although I don't put cases on my Apple phones. The Motorola Droid Turbo 2 does not have that problem because it doesn't need a case. You can drop it face down onto marble, jagged concrete, bathroom tiles.
Can I drop it on my Sennheiser headphone set?
The screen couldn't care less.
Sennheiser.
It's the Kimmy Schmidt of phones.
So is this the one that is like it's printed onto a plastic that's bendable? Like so it can the basically
I don't think
the top
I don't
think can
so.
Bend.
They said it has
oh, really?
A plastic screen that feels and looks like
I mean
glass.
I'm not saying the whole phone can bend, but the screen is printed onto, instead of glass, is printed onto a plastic, all plastic substrates or whatever. And so it's actually not like flexible like paper, but flexible enough that it doesn't shatter when it bends, like
Wired
when it gets
dropped
hit.
Dropped it 30 times, and it still worked perfectly and only had a few minor scuffs.
They're really clumsy.
It's actually.
Or you think that was intentional?
They said you can drop it. Basically, you can drop it and it won't break the screen by dropping it.
What if you drop it onto a bed of nails?
That I gotta wonder if there'd be enough pressure on, especially if they're not
or single
all
nail
the same
maybe.
Length.
Yeah, single
they're
nail.
Not all the same length. There's one that sticks up that quarter inch extra. The screen apparently is really sharp too. It's a 5.4 inch OLED display with a 2560 by 1440. That's quad HD resolution and 540 pixels per inch. They said the screen is plastic, but feels a lot like glass to the touch. The screen may be its marquee feature, but it may not even be the most impressive thing about it. Apparently, according to Wired, it has the best battery life of any phone they've ever used.
Wonder how it scratches, though, if it's plastic.
Like Dre.
wiki.
Thanks, Drew.
So apparently it gets up to 2 days of juice from a single charge. And Wired says that's true. It's got a turbocharger, in quotes, a 25-watt turbocharger that gives you 13 hours of battery life in a 15-minute charge. And you can fully charge the battery in about an hour with the turbo one.
Did you say it's 25?
25-watt turbocharger. Yeah, man, this has got a turbocharger, 25-watt turbocharger. Let's see. It's got, apparently it's got, it that it is, it is, it's got a 21 megapixel camera that's very fast. It shoots 4K video at 30 frames per second. It has a micro SD slot if you want to go beyond the 32 or 64 gig configuration.
That would have been even more awesome if it had a 25 amp charger. Like, you need to get a special line in your house just for the charger for the phone.
A Tesla charger. It'll charge in 2 seconds. But be careful plugging it in.
Don't touch it while it's charging.
But there is the catch. Apparently, it is not a particularly good-looking phone. It's not terrible-looking, they said. And you can design your own via the Moto Maker site. So you can trick the phones back out in materials like ballistic nylon and pebble leather.
So it's a Motorola?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does Google own Motorola phone now? Who owns Motorola cell? I thought they sold off their stuff and somebody bought their cell stuff.
They don't say.
So yeah, Motorola's the Lenovo company.
Oh. Huh.
A while ago.
Okay, but was that the cellular phone?
Yeah, I thought they split up their companies and somebody bought the cell. I don't remember for sure.
So, you know, so here's the thing. So that's the deal. If you tend to break phone screens and you're wanting something pretty durable, you may want to look at this one. If you're looking for the hottest, cool, you know, model pretty phone, then this is not the droid you're looking for.
So it's about as ugly as a phone in a case, is what it comes down to.
It's pretty generic, yeah.
Go and get the other phone and then put it in a case, and you have something that's aesthetically equal.
It kind of looks like a Casio calculator from like the 1980s that has the built-on plastic case on. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm just imagining talking about it.
I think the main thing, it's not pretty. It doesn't stand out in its looks, but it's just a pretty regular.
You know, functional and unbreakable go a long way.
Is it a flip phone?
No.
I'm still sort of surprised that nobody's gotten into the, like, a flip phone or a two-screen
with
phone
a dual screen
open up kind of thing. With a like, maybe a e-ink screen that's on the outside so that you can just get quick information or whatever.
I want a standard phone.
Of course, that probably cost about $2,000.
I want a standard phone like we have now, but I want both sides to be a display. I have no idea what I would
touch
do with it.
Friendly display.
Yeah, this one feels kind of, well, I guess there's a, I'm carrying an S6 Edge Plus, I guess.
A badly set up two display phone. So you're looking at the front and your fingers are on the back. And
let's say you could hold
the dialer
edgewise in front of your face, and then you could do like this type.
Yeah.
Or you could hold it up
setting.
In front of your nose, and it'd give you some kind of virtual reality experience.
You could cross your eyes.
Make you cross-eyed at the same time. Well, on another new tech,
it'd be like one of those things called the glasses thing.
Optigrab,
yeah. Be like that.
Barrett's been distracting in the studio because he has a Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, I went. Jay Lee left, so we're like, all right. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I just got it.
Does it have the accordion? It's the one with accordion.
It was delivered by drone.
Almost. I had to go pick it up. I wanted accordion, it delivered by drone. The weird alien-looking hinge.
Yeah.
Yeah, even the box it came in, like, there's a weird hinge. Not so much a hinge on the box, but the box doesn't close entirely, much like the Surface Book. Yes, these were unobtainium. We talked about it, and I almost got one pre-order, and this was, you know, like 2 or 3 months ago when they first announced, but I really didn't know about them. I wanted to get my hands on them, so I kind of waited until pretty much everyone was sold out of the pre-orders. And then got it in my mind that I wanted one. So I called her, and I was going to go. Dwight kind of put me onto this, and so did Lee, that there were going to be some retail stores that might get one or two. So I was like, okay, I'll just go queue up. So, you know, I thought about going to the Microsoft store. And I got online, and sure enough, Micro Center let me pre-order one. And this was the night before, and they said, you can pick it up the morning of the 26th. So I got up there, and no, it hadn't come in yet, because I guess they were just getting two or three, and they weren't in on the truck yet. So, you know, okay. So I left, and I came back that afternoon, and no, they were not there yet. And then I called several times, and no one seemed to know where it was or anything like that. And then I just, on a whim, I've been calling every couple of days, and I called today, and they said, you know, even though we can't see that you did the in-store purchase, there is one in the store. So I didn't even like say goodbye. I hung up and I got to Micro Center and I went, and there's been, you know,
so you bought it twice.
I don't think I paid for it the first time. It was just kind of an in-store reservation that was going to expire tomorrow anyway. So there are, and this is, Pete and I were talking about this before the show. It's sad because there aren't a lot of the old screwdriver shops anymore, or there aren't just, you know, any of the, you know, hardcore hardware geeks that just know their stuff, you know,
like
inside.
EPO or
yeah, kind of.
Like,
I mean, there's that stuff still there, but a lot of the people that work there, I don't want to say that they're not dedicated. It's just that, you know, for instance, let's just take, you know, the big box stores. Let's take, you know, like, you know, where Jaylee used to work, or, you know, like the ones that look like oil stuff or space stuff. You can tell that there are some employees in there that are just there for the job, and they don't really want to help you, and they don't want to discuss the finer points of the different variations of RAM. They couldn't drop, you know, RAID numbers. They couldn't do anything like that. So I get to Micro Center, and there's a guy that I've been seeing. Not seeing, but, you know, I've recognized him for the better part of, you know, 15, 20 years now. Mike Joyner, he's been there for a long time. And I just kind of see him across the way, and he, like, I guess he felt a disturbance in the force. And I, you know, my eyes meet. I go over there. I'm like, I'm looking for this. He's like, it's not in the system, but wait, I know it's back there. So, yeah, so he made it happen. And the whole thing you get from that is there was actually no way when calling into Micro Center to get to the warehouse or to get anyone there. Really, there's no direct way. You kind of have to go through the phone like
so
this.
So even in the tech, it's who you know.
Even in tech, it's really who you know. And that's what's nice. It's like there are still a couple of people around Houston that are very much, you know, those quintessential hardware people that know the stuff, that like the stuff, eat, breathe it, you know, and are just cool to be around. And he's one of the guys that are still out there. So.
And just to be clear, he did it because you were wanting an interesting device, not because he knew that you were...
Oh, he had no idea who I was. I mean, he may, just because I've been going to Micro Center for so long, every once in a while someone looks at me and kind of gives me a nod, like, weren't you the guy buying Linux stuff 20 years ago? And that's really where my loyalty lies, is, you know, back in the day, they had an early Linux section when no one else had a Linux section, and I want to say I bought almost... Again, it was, you know, software that could have been free, but I wanted to support, you know, the movement, and I wanted to support, you know, that store. But yeah, I bought a ton of Linux stuff.
FreeBSD?
From
Slackware?
Yeah, and that was really cool back when it took, like, you know, 2 weeks of ordering time out of Canada to get, you know, OpenBSD, when they actually had it on the shelves for, like, nothing. You had to dig for it, but that was really cool. You know, so props to Micro Center and props to Mr. Mike Joyner. Go hunt him out if you need some esoteric hardware.
There you go. Well, it is interesting. It's amazingly thin. I've got a...
Ooh, it's
MacBook Pro with the Retina display.
It's kind of tough because there's so much. So this is the one, and I got the i7, so there's two batteries. There's a battery in the top part, which is kind of like the tablet part, and then there's a battery in a graphics card in the keyboard. And now, and the one odd, and I just tried it for the first time ever, the one weird kind of design choice on this is that in order to take the tablet part off the keyboard, it's software. So there's a software button. It releases in a software. So that makes me wonder, like, if you brick firmware, if, you know, I'm going to put Linux on here. I'm assuming that it's like a hardware firmware thing that goes straight to the firmware, but it's definitely a software. It's a soft button. It's not like a magnetic lock where you push it, it just goes. This is like, you know, you brick your laptop, you suddenly you don't have a tablet anymore. So we'll see how it goes. But
so
I kind of like it.
You can be the first guy to brick a Surface.
Yeah,
so
coming all the way back to Cone, I mean, the hinge really does look like that ant lion larva
thing
that
up
dropped in the ears. Yeah.
That looks like a lot like a laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it looks like a
It's pretty much
MacBook,
it's a laptop, yeah.
Like a MacBook Air or something.
The tablet part, yeah, so the screen part is thicker. You know, the base is a little bit thinner than a thin laptop. Like, you know, basically we've got it. It's next to my MacBook Pro with a Retina display.
See, I thought it was going to be like tablet size, like 8 or something. That's 13 or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's got a much more of a. I guess it's not your traditional screen size. So they've gone a little bit taller. I think like if letterbox stuff, it's going to cut some off the top and the bottom, maybe. Pete's hardware, so Pete's got a MacBook Pro, a new MacBook Pro, and that's still, overall, it's a thinner package, and it's more screen real estate, it looks like.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I think, though, although I wonder, the pixel density, I think, is higher on the Surface, so that it's actually more, it may be more pixels than a Retina display.
We'll see. I'll have it out at the Geek Gathering at Cone's.
I didn't know you already had it. I'm curious to see the hinging. Everybody was freaking out about it, and I haven't seen it move. I've only seen, like, still shots of it.
Yeah, it's a little bit creepy. I mean, everything moves just a little bit at a time. And the main thing is it sits it back because the issue with the screen being heavier than a traditional screen and holding like the processor and a lot of stuff like that, it was really top heavy. So, you know, you extend it back and suddenly, falls over. So with this, what they did is they got probably, almost a full another inch of base on the bottom to, counterbalance that. So,
okay.
And it's not the lightest of machines either, Pete. I'm going to touch your...
Sure. Hmm.
Well, no, I take that back. Okay, no, Pete's might be a little bit heavier. I'm used to carrying an air. Yeah. I think I may have strained my forearm on that.
That was picking up my laptop for those of you who are getting some visual image at home.
Context.
Yeah, because you kind of drag. Pete, I'm gonna pick up your...
It's
a little heavier.
Good job, Pete.
Well, you're a lot heavier
that.
Than this surface. Oh, so that'll be, you can see that at the Geek Gathering.
Yeah, Windows 10, it's a little mysterious. I'm getting the hang of it. And we'll have a Linux partition on here before too long.
And I saw you were using the stylus.
The stylus is kind of interesting.
Or is it?
I'd rather have a stylus than, someone's greasy fingers all over my laptop.
Is it stylus only, or will it do touch?
Oh, it'll do touch, but no one's touched it yet. I'm not even going to touch it yet. Yeah. It's still untouched.
You'd rather have a stylus than a frontal lobotomy?
I'd rather have a... Yeah, what is it? How does that go?
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me
than frontal lobotomy.
Yeah.
I was going to rather have a... I'd rather ride my motorcycle. I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride my motorcycle. Is that the same guy? Is that all Guthrie?
I'm not sure.
Is that all 60s stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
One of the Guthries.
Yeah, so you'll be able to see that there at the Geek Gathering. And
which is this...
This Friday.
It's like 2 days.
Yeah, 2808 Mile at Drew. Things get started around 7:30, and who knows?
Goes until we get bored. Or
what
get
is the
out.
Weather? I think the that's right. The weather. There's like a slight chance of rain. I think
Friday, maybe.
I wonder if it's more than slight now.
We may have used up all of our awesome weather karma to do the 20th anniversary party.
But the inside has been kind of.
Oh, it's I bet no one saw it last time because of everything going on up on the roof, but it is much more loungy. There is much more seating. Before, it was just, you go inside. I don't think there was very much room at all to sit inside, which is why we never hang
out.
Take
out a wall or something?
No, what they did to the three tables that used to be up against the wall, they put in, and I think it's actual church pews. So he scored a very long church pew from somewhere. Put like some tables in front of it. So it's much more loungy, and because you're not, doing that bricky three table kind of layout, you can put a lot more people, in church pew. Wow. Now, whether or not a plate gets passed around, I don't know, but it looks fun inside.
Friday night, there is a chance of rain of
80%.
Let's
is
make
that
sure
right?
That's Houston. Is that that's? No, that's over in San Antonio.
Don't go to San Antonio.
Houston says,
come to the Geek Gathering.
I'll be going the other way. Let's see what it's Friday. No, basically same thunderstorms.
Is it 80% chance here, too?
Rain showers in the evening will evolve into a more steady rain overnight. Chance of rain, 80%. Rainfall near half an inch.
It is Houston. Things could change, but it could be damp. We'll try to be inside.
Damp, so we'll try to stake out the inside, the couch and the rug and stuff. There will be people there. I will be there for sure. Barrett will be
there.
Yeah,
I'll be there. I'll be there.
Flicked.
We can all... If the weather sucks, then we can just reminisce about the 20th anniversary party from 3 weeks ago.
Do we get to see Groove? Groove made the 20th.
I might be working Friday night.
I had to ask the J. Lee question.
Also, riding your bike to cons wouldn't go over so great on a rainy thunderstorm night.
We'll Uber it.
There you go. There you go. Try out Uber. So, so there's that, and then I guess we have one segment left, and I'm sure we can fill whatever other time. And no, there's no.
We're running out of time. Yeah, we might blow the full show.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious
science. I am loving the speakers that you get on a full blown MacBook Pro. Although, at home, mostly this just sits on my desk and is hooked up to an amplifier and speakers, so it doesn't, those are sort of irrelevant. But this one, you probably, to really get the full deal, you need to go to geekradio.com and click the link. But NASA released some really cool images of the sun from the Solar Dynamics Observatory. It's a semi-autonomous spacecraft suspended about 22,000 miles above the Earth in an inclined geosynchronous orbit, for those of you who wondered what kind of orbit it was in.
I thought that was the plot of Heroes Reborn. I'm so confused now. So this is real.
So what do you mean by semi-autonomous?
It
almost sentient.
It keeps its eyes on the sun nearly constantly. It captures an image more than once every second. In this case, in the article that I found in Wired, the images are of a solar storm. The star acts up, erupting into coronal mass ejections and solar flares, stuff like that. Every once in a while, those emissions will make it all the way to Earth, leading to the northern lights, or, you know, disrupting GPS satellites and stuff like that. Part of the observatory's mission is to monitor and understand potentially dangerous solar activity. So they have a cool, there's a cool video of, of course, now there'll be a commercial. Never mind. I was going to play it, but I can mute.
Yeah, YouTube is just horrible with that stuff now.
Yeah,
you can,
you know, it's
$9.99.
Yeah, you can use RedTube instead.
And see, yeah.
Wait a minute.
I saw somebody post that on Facebook. Like, oh yeah.
No, it's YouTube Red.
YouTube started their new, you know, competitive system. YouTube Red. You can get to it by going to RedTube instead of YouTube.
Negative.
But no, RedTube is a porn site.
Listeners at home, please do not try that.
That's brilliant.
Jay says we're all fired on IRC. He said that a little ago. I think that was well placed.
With the lag, we have no idea what of the last 10 things that we've done. That it could possibly be. It's
all
some awesome stuff. The pictures when they show the sun in the video are the kind of trippy Floyd at the planetarium kind of stuff, but with the more of a...
It's like tie-dye rainbow colored?
No, I mean, it's the kind of sun, you know, that kind of red and black and orange type deal, but the loops and gas ejections...
Yeah, those corneal
like
ejections are usually pretty crazy because, yeah, they usually, like, shoot off and then start some streams back and then it pulls apart and it's really cool looking.
That stuff, it does eventually mess with communications here on Earth, too.
Yep. And if there's a really, really nice one at some point, it'll knock out some stuff.
Like an EMP?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, they're actually finally starting to, they're starting to plan for it, which, of course, means that right before they're ready, then... Out it all goes.
Talked about it before, but I think the last kind of big ejection like that was like late 1800s, and there were reported cases of telegraph wires catching on fire and just stuff like that. I mean, just totally took out the communications. So that was, you know, it's large gauge, you know, 1800s wire was catching on fire. Our small cell phones and embedded chips and, you know, systems on chips, it's not going to stand a chance.
That's why I live in a gigantic...
Faraday cage.
Just like, because I watched that. There was, what's the one, now I'll forget
you
the
make,
title.
Need to make a huge steel safe room.
Enemy of the State.
There was that, the horror movie, or not horror movie.
Ass versus kind of the Evil Dead?
Alien versus
the Sale.
Alien versus Predator.
One where they're in Russia. The two guys go to Russia for some kind of .com thing, and then the aliens attack, and they're like electric.
Oh, yeah.
And there's basically some old man, the crazy old man who's got, like, his whole apartment is a giant Faraday cage. And so he's...
The Darkest Hour?
Gene Hackman?
Yeah. There's sort of the cool scene. The way they find the old man with cage is it's night. It's dark outside, and they're outside. And they look down this long street, and up in this apartment block about 12 floors up, the lights are all on one floor. Everything else is toast, but that's lit up, and so they go and find the guy with the Faraday cage.
So it's a Russian-American science fiction thriller.
It's decent. I mean, it doesn't try to be something. It's not Independence Day. It doesn't have that kind of budget. But they make the aliens are creepy. They're electric, and so when one of them is coming, lights come on. Like, if they walk by a car, the alarm will go off or the headlights will start flashing. So it's invisible aliens.
We need to enslave them as a race, and then I will never have, you know, a dead cell phone again.
I thought you were going to say, wow. We need to enslave them as a raid. Five.
Five.
We could just
we should stripe them
glass,
and not make sure they're
just imprison them in a
redundant.
Big glass thing with light bulbs in it, and they'll be moving around, and the lights will be on for free.
Get them to have babies, and then put them in all the light bulbs.
So, and then in other news, this is more earthbound science news, but I thought this one was cool. Archaeologists have found a huge number of Greek shipwrecks in the Aegean Sea. They stumbled across 22 shipwrecks in 2 weeks.
Did they get some new tech, or how did they...
Let's see. They found a particular site located beneath the Forni Archipelago, a collection of 13 islands and islets in the Aegean Sea, among the top archaeological finds of 2015. It was the scientists from the Greek Ephorate of Underwater Antiquities, RPM Nautical Foundation, and the University of Southampton discovered 22 shipwrecks during 2 weeks. It brings to light ancient trade networks that once connected the entire Mediterranean, possibly dating back to 700 BC, said Greek director George Katsaflakis. I'm sure that
he may or may not be Greek.
The trade networks are thought to have connected portions of the Black Sea, Aegean Sea, Cyprus, the Levant, and Egypt. What's astonishing is not only the number of shipwrecks, but also the diversity of the cargoes, some of which have been found for the first time. At least three of the shipwreck sites had cargo that had not been found previously on shipwrecks.
Some of this stuff looks like gold.
They go back to the...
One of them had a whole bunch of Atari 2600 ET cartridges.
Oh, that's where they went.
Shipwrecks date back to the time span from the Archaic period, 700 to 480 BC, through the late medieval period, the 16th century. Several wrecks date to the classical and Hellenistic periods. For those of you at home who don't know what any of that means, like, you know, when the 300 were doing their thing.
Circa Super NES.
With Athens and Socrates and that kind of stuff. But over half of the wrecks date to the late Roman period, which was around 300 to 600 AD. And then if you go to the link on the site, there's pictures from the expedition with some of the stuff they found. But, yeah, 22 shipwrecks there with the cargoes and all intact. I mean, from a scientific perspective, it's pretty awesome. It's sort of... the equivalent of if you found a Spanish galleon with its cargo here in, say, the Gulf of Mexico. But this is more knowledge interest than big cash and gold kind of thing.
Jay said that we're getting fired for all of it.
We haven't done all of it yet. We've barely gotten started. We've got 3 more weeks to get all of it done.
Yeah, well, and we've got 3 more weeks before Jay gets back to even say anything, so...
I think to be officially fired, there need to be signatures.
So it's so freeing. Now we can do whatever we want for the next couple of weeks, and he has to listen to it.
Jay's out for summer.
And, well, and speaking of next week...
I'm out. We're going to be a little bit of a change.
Barrett will be out, but we'll have guests. Many, many guests.
We'll have many Greek guests.
In now my show, have, there are many guests.
Back from the
mini
of,
guests, small guests.
Back from the brink of death, zombie Dwight Silverman should be.
Yay.
And.
Not an actual zombie.
In an awkward former coworker kind of thing, former Chronicle Psy Guy Eric Berger will also be here.
Now, actual Psy Guy. Space City Weather.
Now he's the. Now he works for Ars Technica,
and he has his own weather website.
Was quote unquote Psy Guy a property of like William Randolph Hearst Company, like Chronicle?
I'm not
Did
sure.
he take that with him? Did he port his name?
Well, now we have a question to ask him.
Yeah, there you go. Is he like this guy formerly known as Psy Guy? Like, does he have to go Prince style?
Now he's the Psych Guy.
Psych Guy.
Now he's Psy Guy, but he spells it like Psy from
PSY.
Korea. Gungam weather.
So we'll have that, and probably, and maybe Lee will have made his way back from Chicago by now. I don't know if his flight was just so late that he never got a chance to come by here, or if he like was listening to the show as he drove down from the airport, and it's like
I don't want to touch that.
Screw it.
He's still trying to clear customs with more than 4 ounces of Soylent.
Flying from Chicago. We're sorry, sir.
The TSA took an interest in that.
It's made of people. Still no.
I have to send you through customs.
I've seen that movie. I know what this is. We're
I'm a big Charlton Heston fan.
You need to buy that drink a seat, sir.
Was it Edward G. Robinson that was the guy who, like, the old guy who in Soylent, who put himself through? Because at the end of the of
spoiler
Soylent Green, spoiling a movie from a crummy Charlton Heston movie from 1973.
42 years.
Let's see. I'm trying to think who else was in it. But basically, there was an old man who, like, put himself through the process, and that's how Charlton Heston. Yeah, Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah. Nice.
Got our own IMDb.
And the real IMDb.
Well, I can confirm it by looking at the... it's interesting because the 70s was so dystopian...
Logan's Run.
Logan's Run. Well, the Warriors was, in a sense, dystopian. The idea was where the gangs could take over New York City, that it was just that close. And Omega Man, which have you watched it recently?
Oh, not.
The one with Charlton Heston.
Probably been 20 years.
Oh, my gosh. It is.
Cheese or good?
Hip Cheese. 60s old dudes like Charlton Heston would think was like an ideal life because he had. His apartment was just like something. The Playboy Bachelor Pad of the Month, and he's making himself a scotch and wearing a smoking jacket.
It's like Space Age,
the Down with Love, yeah, straight up.
And then but it was edgy because it also had like an interracial romance in there for Charlton. And
because it was they played the girl from Ipanema, but it was on electronic instruments.
Well, the fun part to me is they weren't quite as focused on paying attention to details. So when he's driving around in the movie, he's driving around in the empty city because he's the last human kind of thing. Everybody else has turned into some kind of Anthony Zerbe led hippie, like weird chalky white skin and white eyes and weird
hair. That's sitting kind of close
Spoilers.
To home now, man. Yeah.
No,
careful.
They're all nerds.
They look like the negative of your picture.
Got that on my DVR. I'm waiting
to
see.
But when Charlton Heston is driving around, if you look in the background, you can see like traffic lights in the background.
Cars.
Blinking. You can see like sometimes you can see other cars.
Somewhere in the movie you can see Dick Van Patten.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He plays Usher number one.
8 was enough.
I love him, IMDb.
Yeah, and he's like the lowest listed on the thing. So, but now instead we have, we have the Hunger Games as our dystopia.
Maze
Runner. I am hungry.
Feed Barrett.
So true.
We need to make the ultimate 2015. Thriller, which is Barrett's phone, Barrett's keyboard. Will it survive?
No.
Will the Surface
Spoiler
book
alert. No.
All right. Well, so we've gotten through a successful first Lee-free, totally no Lees whatsoever. No Lees were harmed in the making of this episode. Catch us for the Geek Gathering.
Saturday night. No, Friday night. My bad. Whoa. 2808 Milo and Drew. No more misinformation. Friday night. Come out.
And make sure and tune in next week when we have special guests and stuff. Until then, I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett. And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo.
Thank you. It's time for Blues for Food, feeding Houston for 26 years. Over 12 hours of world-class blues benefiting the Houston Food Bank. It's all happening at the Shakespeare Pub on Sunday, November the 8th. Your admission is any non-perishable food item or cash. Includes music, genuine Texas barbecue, raffles, silent auctions, and lots of fun. It's all happening at the Shakespeare Pub Sunday, November the 8th. With live music by Bourbon Street, Mighty Ork and the Unusuals, Annette Matois and the Guys, Aaron James Band with Chris Ruist, Larry Garner, Sonny Boy Terry Band, Jimmy Louisiana Dotson, Rich Del Grosso, Trudy Lynn, the Steve Crace Band, the Zydeco Dots, Dave Neveling and the Blues Cats, Rick Lee and the Night Owls, topped off by Sparetime Murray's world-famous Blues Jam. Music goes from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. Blues for Food. Over 12 hours of world-class blues benefiting the Houston Food Bank.
You can make a difference by donating something, whether it's moving or not. An old car, RV, motorcycle, tractor, or boat. To KPFT's vehicle donation program, whether we played your favorite song or helped you discover your new favorites, you listen because you enjoy KPFT's unique mix of sounds. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to help now. Your tax-deductible donation before the new year gets you a KPFT membership and makes such a difference at a station that is the heart and soul of our community. So, just move to the phone and call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org, and we'll make it easy to donate to the nonprofit radio station that you love. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.